All right, welcome back to Cosmic Disclosure. I'm your host, David Wilcock, and I'm here with none other than Pete Peterson. So, Pete, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
We were talking in a previous episode about giant extraterrestrials that you said came here, and we ended on kind of a cliffhanger. You said that, to the best of your knowledge, there are crashes in Antarctica, and that the lowest of these crashes occurred where it was still a continent that did not have ice on it, but was more like a tropical type of environment. Could you tell us a little bit more about what happened there? And you had said something about people that were as high as 37 feet tall.
It's my understanding that some of the people from that, we call it the lowest crash because it's deeper under the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And along with what happened was there was a spaceship crash. You'd think that people with high technology would have less crashes, and they probably do. But when you think of coming across the galaxy and the fact that they're probably going to be, at that time, they probably didn't have time travel, or they probably didn't have a way to put people to sleep with no degeneration over long periods of time.
Mm.
You know, there are many things that can happen, and as perfect as man or modern man or ancient man or far more intelligent man than we are builds things, they're still going to have problems. And there are electronic parts that you build them as good as you can. We've done tons of beautiful things for outer space. We build them up so that they won't be hit by micrometeorites. We've built them up for a number of reasons, but we still don't get everything. So it's natural that they would have crashes. We've had a lot of UFO crashes.
Do you think it's possible they were in a war, that they might have been shot down?
Well, no, there's always been wars, but there have been things like the terrestrial, in other words, the near-a-planet navigation and steerage of a lot of these early craft were done based on magnetic lines. Well, when you get near a pole, the magnetic lines, instead of being nice and parallel to the surface, where you could go over the surface, the poles, they bend in,
right,
and go in the electromagnetic or geomagnetic pole, they go in. Well, here's a craft, it's stabilizing itself on these things, and all of a sudden, it gets sucked sideways and down to go in. And so that's why there were probably more crashes in the Antarctic and Arctic regions.
Do you think there was something that was desirable in that area for why they wanted to try to land there, even if there's this problem with the magnetic field?
Well, why did we want to go there? Why do we have a huge ice station there? There's all kinds of things that happen in the different environment that's there. There's a lot of growth of organic chemicals, organic living chemicals. There's a lot of growth that can happen there that can't happen where we have a downward gravity rather than an inward gravity. There are a lot of minerals and metals processing, semiconductor processing tasks that can take place when gravity is different and when the electromagnetic field is different.
What was the approximate size of this ship, to your knowledge, the oldest one?
The oldest one, I think, was probably about 300, maybe 300 feet in diameter.
How was it first discovered in modern times?
It was discovered by some of our spy satellites.
About what time did we start to try to get down there and explore this ship that you know of?
Oh, boy. I had to be, 16 years old.
Hmm.
I'm 77. And
77 now?
60 years ago.
60 years ago. So 2017, we're talking about like the late 1950s.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the level of excitement about this kind of a discovery? I mean, that sounds way more
interesting
than
Roswell. Well, we couldn't tell exactly what it was. In the beginning, were lumps. You know, they're lumps, but they're not lumps that appear to be made by nature, they're lumps that appear to be made by man.
Right.
In other words, their geometricity was something that man would have done. So that's what got us excited. But they're 3 miles deep in an area that's frees you in about 30 seconds if you don't have proper clothing on the surface. And so you have to have special tools to even go after it. It's 3 miles deep. How are you going to go there? You know pretty much that where this was in a valley, because there are mountains underground that are probably 2.5-3 miles deep or high.
Right.
And so you know, it's been known to be there. Because of the fact that it was known, that's where they built some of the ice stations over the top. So eventually maybe we'd find a drill a hole or find a way to go down. Also, there are layers of things that are obviously man-made things coming up from that area, because it's now, the ice there is now three miles plus or minus deep.
Did anyone find a hatch or a door or anything that would eventually allow them to get inside the ship?
No.
Okay.
It looks like, I mean, the vegetation, there's a lot of vegetation surrounding it. This kind of blurred the view that we had in the meantime, because the carbon absorbs radio waves, which is what we had to look at things. Mm. So as our technology grew, we found better ways to look at the same pictures.
Well, could you just give us a view of what the hull looked like if we eventually got to the point that we could reach the hull?
We made the hole. It was all ice.
Okay.
So we're digging it out.
What did we see when we finally got down to the hull? What did the hull look like?
Well, it was metallic. It was long and tubular.
Were there any structures on it, or was it just totally smooth?
It had rivets, but they were surface rivets. I mean, they were chamfered in, so that the rivet went down. It's not a rounded head that sticks up off the off the surface.
Was there anything unusual about the material of the hull? Anything that we
discovered? Yes, very, very unusual.
Okay.
Very unusual characteristics. We've not ever found, and this is normal, I would think, we've not ever found elements that were different from our normal table of the elements. I mean, we say, okay, you have a nucleus and so many protons, so many neutrons, and then you have electron rings that sit in different rings around that.
Right, periodic table is all there is.
So,
everything.
So, but we have found some that can be, there are things that can be radionically changed. Like, for example, a water molecule has been used for, water has been used for healing for as far as back as we have history. And the way that they use water for healing is that they lay on of hands and give it a different.
So you're saying there was some material science breakthroughs in the hull? Could you tell
us? Oh, absolutely. I don't know what they were. That wasn't my way I was involved at the time.
But what was strange about the hull? What was the physical thing we could observe?
Well, the strange about the hull was it was there. It was as old as it was. We knew that people had visited here long before there were human beings, long before there were apes, long before there were any precursors to human beings. I mean, we've gone through numerous complete changes.
You had told me before that when people tried to cut a piece out of the hull and pull it away, that something happened that was unusual.
Yeah.
What happened?
It didn't cut out and it didn't pull away. It pulled back.
It pulled back?
It was bent to be part of what it was.
So there was some gravitational weird attraction?
No, it was an informational field that was built around it, which is where after probably 15 years of study, I kind of figured out that there was a whole set of science that was dealt with information.
You're saying that the hull had self-healing qualities?
It had self-preservation qualities.
So if I tried to cut a piece out, what would happen if I tried to pull that piece away from the ship?
Well, you would say probably start with a diamond saw. Today you'd start with a cubic boron nitride saw, four times harder than diamond. You can cut diamond with it like butter. And you'd started with a saw of some kind. You might have started with a torch. We tried a torch. The metal would get metallic, and you'd pull the torch away, and it'd go back, and it'd be exactly the way it was before it got metallic. And
wow.
You know, and it wouldn't run down the side. It'd kind of wobble like an egg white.
Was there speculation that there might have been nanites inside the material, like nanorobots that were doing this?
No. I mean, I think there were those things at that time, but I don't. They wouldn't have been used there in that place.
What happened if there were larger cracks in the ship? Like, let's say that it broke in a certain area, water got in, turns to ice, the ice expands.
It didn't work that way.
What happened?
Self healed. And I mean, they weren't cracks; they were bends. But it was like, you know, trying to stretch a shoe sole. You know, they're built to be flat, and you walk on them, but you can bend them more than 90 degrees. Then you put them on and walk on them some more, and no damage. So the metal was very, very highly flexible.
So, as As the ice melted and turned to water, what happened to the cracks, if there were any cracks in the hull?
Okay, what we're talking about is ice inside the craft, which expands as it freezes.
Okay.
It pushed apart. There are certain areas. It looked like this thing might have been built designed in, again, six-sided tiles that fit together, and like playing with magnets, that they would have magnetically stuck together, but melded.
Wow.
And so when you tried to tear the thing, it like came apart and like bricks that it was made out of, like Lego blocks in a way. Not as technical as Lego blocks, but just sides that fit. So it evidently shoved it off. It also appears that when in that original time, remember it was a tropical area, not semi-tropical, a tropical area. It looks like it might have been moved there. A part of it might have been moved there. Because it looks like the freezing that took place, because this craft was completely waterproof. So it looks like what happened was it started freezing, it started making pressure, these blocks started coming apart, and it may have been even magnetically, because they had some unbelievable magnets. But anyway, it looks like these came apart, water got inside, then it froze, and then it shoved out. Some of the stuff came apart. And then when they got some heat down in there to get the heat out so they could see, you know, what's inside this thing, what kind of machinery is here, what kind of control surfaces are here, it went back together.
Wow.
And there were no, you know, it wasn't, there weren't places that were bent, like permanently bent.
Were there individual quarters, living quarters for the people in the ship?
That was out of my time. That was later, much later.
Okay.
I mean, they played with that thing for a long time. We had a little hole that you could, it was like trying to climb into the lunar lander, you know, 3.5 miles. I know that there were several people hired who had been contortionists trying to get into some of the interior stuff.
So you said that you did have more contact with what was on the second layer.
Yes.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. Now, tell us first of all, what is there any relationship between the ship at the bottom and the ship on the second layer? Were they
similar? They were extraterrestrial.
Okay.
That's about the maximum thing in common. I mean, they were probably, at least that one was powered with, it had some anti-gravity in it. It had
the second one, you mean?
Second one. It had the same rotating masses and counter-rotating electromagnetic fields. And I guess the one that's there today, again, is another one I know almost nothing about.
What do you mean the one that's there today?
There are three layers of these things.
Okay.
Three crashes. And strangely, one's down about a mile, and one's about 2 miles, and one's about 3 miles.
So tell us a little bit about what was discovered with the second craft. Was it a newer, I'm assuming?
Oh, much far different place. It came from a whole different part of the universe, I'm sure.
Okay.
There were things that were similar, which told me that there was probably commercial traffic / communication between those societies.
Okay.
And wholly different controls. Those people had three fingers. So you had a place that your hand would fit into an indentation and a control surface, and it was, you had two thumbs, opposing thumbs, one on either side, and a main finger. And we can later get into how that got me going on the Tower of Babel and what got confused, but we now have five fingers. We have five fingers specifically because we were confused with counting in tens.
If these people had three fingers, are you saying that they used base six in their calculations?
I have a dear personal friend of many, many years, 30 or 40 years, who's just about to publish a book, and we show a base six mathematics in which 99% of all of our mathematics is proven absolutely wrong.
Did we inherit this system from them, this base six system, do you think?
I think that that was a good part of why my friend has been examining the base six system now for about 13 years.
Okay.
I don't think they not only didn't teach us that, what they did was gave us five fingers from three, or they gave us five fingers from six. And when you look at the words that I've seen written, this is go back 67,000 years, when I see the words that were written, I can't tell in translation whether it was three or six.
So we have this interesting time counting system where there's 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 24 hours in a day. A lot of this stuff would be called a sexagesimal type of system. So there's a lot of sixes in the time system. I'm wondering, is that related to this inheritance that we got?
It's in everything. Remember I told you the universe was tiled with six-sided tiles?
Yeah, it has to do with
there
sacred
three
geometry.
Universes, body, mind, spirit, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. It's all over, everywhere. And if we use a mathematical system based on sixes, everything changes. Pi, instead of becoming a long, long, billion-long random number, becomes just a simple series of groups of three.
Are you saying that if we look at something like pi, where right now 3.14159, it just goes on, does that become more like an integer if you do it in base six?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it.
Do you still get decimal points?
And there's no such thing as infinity.
Really?
Don't have to go there.
What would happen to pi if we did it in base six? What's the, in this special math you're saying?
Well, from a practical standpoint, look where we've gotten using pi as, 3.14159,
Right.
Is it practical? Once you get past a certain point, you're in billionths of an inch, you're smaller than the dimensions of the atoms that you're making things out of for machining and stuff. So in that respect, it's okay. It's nice to know. But in the respect of where that leads us in astronomical dimensions and shapes and distances, very important. I mean, you go out 700 light years and 1/1,000,000,000 of a degree is going to put you off 500,000,000 miles.
Sure. So let's get back to the chair now. You said that these beings had three fingers. You said two of them were like thumbs and that they went into indentations.
Right.
Could you give us any more information about how they were actually able to control the ship from there?
Well, that was my job, was figuring out control and how was this thing controlled. And it wasn't a chair. It was actually a panel that kind of dropped off so that they had arms somewhat like ours, I guess. And it dropped off. And so you have a thing that your hands would have just fit right into, down into it. And then there was a clamp that came over about where an elbow would be a longer forearm. But anyway, it went down in and held it there. So there were some stress forces because they wouldn't have had a clamp there. So, and not a whole lot because it wasn't a heavy-duty clamp and a long thing like a cast.
Real quick, were the fingers longer than ours?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, much larger. Much larger.
Really?
Probably that long.
Wow. Okay.
And the shorter fingers on the sides.
I'm not understanding, though, how they controlled the ship.
Well, they moved their fingers.
What would that do?
Every single thing to control the ship.
Okay.
Everything.
Wow.
Yeah. And those units that it fit in were like a one-sided glove. The actual unit moved as well as the fingers, so you had a lot more control parameters. And one of them stabilized. One of them did the tilt, speed, or slow down, speed.
Were you able to tell how many joints they had in their fingers?
From what I looked at, I would say they probably were more like built like a worm or a snake rather than with joints. But my understanding from what I've seen was they had joints in them.
If these beings have three fingers, and you said that there is a theory that we have five fingers, did they somehow modify our DNA on purpose?
That's what the Tower of Babel was all about. I got seeing what this mathematician philosopher that I work with, I got seeing, and then from things I've noticed in the past, because I try to be a good observer, when things I saw in the past, the Tower of Babel and confusing the languages didn't make sense to me. So much happened when that occurred, at the time that occurred, far more than changing the language.
All right, let me say something dumb, just so everybody, even the kids who watch this, will understand this. Because we do have kids 8 years old. I'm not saying they're dumb, but they might not have heard about Tower of Babel. So the idea is that at one time everyone spoke the same language, could talk to each other, and then something happened that caused us to have separate languages and be spread apart?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Could you explain what the Tower of Babel is?
Exactly the other way around.
Oh.
Everybody, every different race came from light years or millions or more light years from each other. They all had totally different languages. Mm. We had a predominant language on Earth. Different story. We had a number of aliens on Earth. And like we learned to speak in Africa, there's a kind of a common language. Swahili is a common language.
So you're saying there was a there was an attempt to make a common language for all these extraterrestrial immigrants on Earth?
That's a natural thing.
Well, how did this relate to Five Fingers?
That's where I'm coming.
Okay.
I just need to get there.
Okay.
Okay. So I got looking at the Tower of Babel, which was supposed to have confused our languages. That didn't make any scientific or mathematical sense to me whatsoever. So I said, where am I going to learn? Well, I know that the Vatican Library contains 80% of the Tower of, or the Great Library of Alexandria, the part that didn't burn. I know they have books that go back 72,000 years that are much more technical than the books today. We still haven't been able to figure out how to read many of those. But we've gone through a number of different groups of people that were here on the Earth, running Earth, living here. And so I said, what I need to do is look at what happened at the Tower of Babel, because it didn't make sense. So what I found out was what they didn't, they altered some parts of the language, yes. They confused some of them. But they also, the main thing they did was change the counting base. And that made all the sense in the world, because you can do things with 6, 0 through 5 mathematics. You can do things with that that are totally different than anything you can do without that. And it's very subtle, but it's so totally important. It changes everything scientifically, everything.
So are you saying that the development of Five Fingers in some way threw us off from this ideal mathematics?
Totally threw us off. Because in the you can use either 3 or you can use 6. It's just 2 3s.
Right.
So we have 2 5s, so we go to 10.
Was this, do you think that this, if this decision was made to give us Five Fingers, do you think that was done voluntarily?
No, it wasn't done voluntarily. They simply changed this. Boom.
Okay. And why would they want to confuse people on Earth? What would
because
be the
goal? Man or sentient beings' personal philosophy is pretty much the same. We all started out trying to survive somewhere. And so we needed to have survival mechanisms. And then we came up with mathematics. And we needed to have mathematics in order to do the engineering and things, so forth, things that we've done. You can do that with any base set of base numbers.
Right.
Like all of our digital world is base 2, 0 right. and 1.
Can you tell us what is so special about the number 3? What is it about 3 that makes it so intrinsic to this number system?
Okay. We know, as best I know, nothing about the informational world. The informational world is the structure of the world we live in. It's the structure of the whole universe. Everything in the universe appears as 3s.
What are some examples?
Size, shape, gravity, travel, speed of light, light, electronics, you know, everything. Every single thing that's physical in the universe is based on 3s. And, I mean, everything, even to the point that how many, like I've spent 10 years in the Marine Corps, and you learn that one person can control 3 people. You have one platoon commander, and he has 3 squads. Each squad has 3 fire teams. Each fire team has 3 people. And you'll find throughout history, you look at the structure of almost all churches. You have a pope, and then you have 2 bishops, and, you know, on and on and on. And then they have sub-bishops, and it's everywhere. And the tiling of the information of the universe is on 6-sided tiles like a soccer ball.
Right.
Which is 3 triangles. And so to make a six-sided device. So you can use 3s, 6s, 12s. You look at, say, just take the last number. It isn't 10, it's 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Right.
You look at 9. 9 times 1 is 9. 2 3s. 2 times 9 is 2. 6 3s. 6 3s add up to what? 9. 2 3s add up to what? 9. Take 5, 45. 5 and 4 is 9.
Yeah.
You take 9 times 7 is 63. 6 and 3 is 9.
Hmm.
So it's very interesting how that spreads as the base net, like we're woven onto a net. And the whole net is based in threes. Everywhere you see a junction on six-sided, take six-sided tiles, everywhere those sides of those tiles line up, you have a junction of three things. Every junction is three things coming together.
I'm curious about whether this has anything to do with fractal mathematics, because when you zoom in on that Mandelbrot set, you keep going in, you keep seeing the same structure appearing again and again.
Yes, and you'll see that it's all six-sided once you get to the base of it.
Do you have any idea what Tesla said about the number three?
My grandfather was Tesla's right-hand man at Colorado Springs here.
Hmm.
And I have all that information, was taught it from the time I was a child.
Hmm.
And yes, Tesla knew this. Tesla was one hell of an engineer, but he also was obviously visited.
Right.
But he understood it, which for them was unfortunate, but that's... And for us, he scared the hell out of us, and so he was put against his whole life.
Hmm. All right, well, that's all the time we have for in this episode. There's still a lot more to talk about regarding Antarctica and this fascinating story about the number three and people who may have naturally counted that way because that was built into their physiology. All that and more is going to be coming up in a future episode of Cosmic Disclosure. I'm here with Pete Peterson, and I thank you for watching.